I live in a city with werewolves and fae. How much more is it to believe in volcano gods? She wiped her face, and I saw that she was clearing the skin beneath her eyes. My dogs like you. It wasn't as much of a non sequitur as it sounded like. I don't want to believe you. If I believe you, then this thing has my husband. She gave me a brief, tight smile, and her voice was raw. What can I do to help him?
We don't know, Adam said. We are working on it. First, we'd like to get you somewhere safe.
She examined his face, then looked at me.
Okay, she said.
Let me stop at home and put extra food out for the dogs and get a few things packed. I am going to have to be there in the morning to feed them. Even if I could find someone willing to feed the dogs, and we have a real basket case in the rehab kennel right now, I could not ask anyone to come by if something dangerous might be hunting.
Good enough, said Adam.
The dogs were silent again when we stopped at Lucia and Hoel's home. She'd already gotten out of her car when Adam stopped the SUV behind her. I hopped out to make sure she didn't go in alone, and that's when I smelled it.
Blood,
I said quietly to Adam, and shut the SUV door and sprinted over to Lucia. Hold on. I caught her arm and stopped her about two body lengths from the front door.
Shh.
I couldn't hear anything, but he'd been here. Along with the blood, I could smell his magic and a faint burnt scent like scorched hair.
What's wrong? She whispered.
I don't know, I lied, because if she was like Hoel, the fact that her dogs were in trouble would mean I'd have to sit on her to keep her out.
We're going to wait here for Adam. He's changing, and it'll take a while. Be patient. If I'm panicking for nothing, it won't matter. But if there's something here, I'd rather face it with a werewolf.
Changing? You mean changing into a werewolf?
That's right.
Only then did I realize that the reason I knew that was because of our mate bond. He hadn't said anything to me before I sprinted to Lucia.
If you want to, you can go wait in your car.
I didn't think she would, but it was worth trying. In her car, she might have a chance to get away if things went south.
Is it because your brother is Native American? She asked.
My eyes were good in the dark, and I was looking so hard they ached, but all I saw were a few bats and a squirrel. It took a moment to realize that I really didn't have any idea what she was talking about. Is what because he is Native American? I asked.
Sorry, she said. When I'm nervous, I forget to say everything out loud. Is he psychic because he is Native American?
As far as I know, Native Americans are no more psychic than anyone else, I told her. My father, though, he was...
Was what? Coyote?
A bull rider in rodeos. But in his spare time, he hunted...
Vampires.
Demons. He was something of a shaman, and some of that followed his children.
You don't have visions?
No.
I turned into a coyote and saw ghosts.
You speak of him in the past tense, she said. Lucia asked questions when she was scared. I got that. I did that sometimes, too. More often I talked. Sometimes I laughed. It was better than crying, and it made me look braver than I was. I nodded.
My father died. The bad guys got him.
Coyote lived. Coyote always lived. The human guise he'd wrapped around himself because he was bored, the man my mother had fallen in love with, he had died. The SUV door opened, and it was too soon for it to be Adam.
I'm taking my chances out here, Gary Laughing Dog said. I got nothing against werewolves, but when they are changing...
Just as well, I told him. They get pretty grumpy. Gary lifted his head and smelled the air. He glanced at me, and I nodded, knowing he was smelling guayota for the first time. He grimaced.
Just so you know, kid, he said, I usually run when the bad things start happening.
Me too, said Lucia.
And Gary and I exchanged quick grins, because she was lying. The sound of the SUV's door opening had us all turning to look. Adam was beautiful as man and as wolf. His wolf isn't huge, not like Samuel's or Charles's wolves are, but he is substantial and graceful. He flowed out of the vehicle without making a sound, a blue-gray wolf with black markings. He raised his head and looked at the house.
Okay, I said, we're going in. Adam will take the lead, then me, Lucia, and Gary will be rear guard.
You did hear me the first time, right?
Gary said. That's why you are in the rear, I told him, to give us warning when the bad guys eat the rear guard. He laughed, then took a good look at the door and stopped.
Someone's been inside, he said.
Lucia had locked the door when we left for the restaurant, but that hadn't stopped the interloper. The door had been forced, breaking the frame. Most of the damage was on the inside. Apply enough inward force, and that happens. Adam shouldered the door open and paused. Then he kept going. I followed him, wishing for a gun, but I'd left my Sig Sauer in the safe at work and my .44 S&W at home. I hadn't wanted to retrieve the Sig with all the police and cantrip agents running around. Maybe I was going to start leaving a gun in each car, too. Just inside the door, I understood exactly what had made Adam pause. Something had marked territory in the house. I wrinkled my nose. It wasn't a dog, or, and I thought about Zach's complaint about his hotel room, a human peeing in the corner.
If that is Guayota, I'm going to completely revise my opinion on the manners of primitive gods, Gary whispered.
You have heard some of the stories about Coyote, haven't you? I asked. True, I hadn't heard any about him marking territory, but a lot of coyote stories sound like something thought up in locker rooms by a bunch of horny teenage boys. I was pretty sure Coyote enjoyed those the most. Maybe they were all true. Adam glanced back at us, and I caught the reproach. He didn't chatter when he was scared. Adam was the man in charge, Wolf in charge. So if he wanted quiet, we'd better give it to him. The blood smell had faded once we were in the house, so nothing had died here, I didn't think. But the urine made it so rank, Lucia was coughing, that I couldn't be sure.
Nothing alive in here. Tell her to get her things and we'll go back to the kennels.
Adam's voice slid into my head like warm honey. I'd never told him how much I liked it, because, like telling him how sexy it was when he did sit-ups when I could see his bare stomach, it could never be unsaid. He had enough power over me already. He didn't need to know how weak I was.
I love it when you talk this way to me, too, Adam told me.
Adam says that whoever broke in is gone now, I said, trying not to smile, because it would be inappropriate. We'll have you pack something, then check on the dogs. I didn't tell her what I was afraid we'd find in the kennels. Free to run, they might have stood a chance against what I'd faced in my garage. But they hadn't been free to run. Where's your bedroom?
Second door on the left, she said.
The door was closed, and I opened it, because it was less likely to take damage if it was me than if it was Adam. Werewolves break things like doorknobs. As soon as I opened it, the smell of urine and musk quadrupled. I glanced inside. It looked as though a giant dog had torn the room to bits, piled everything up in the middle of the bed, and peed all over it, which might have been exactly what happened. I shut the door quickly. Belay that plan, I said. We'll find you some clothes at Honey's. It's not fun watching someone's life get ripped to bits. Lucia didn't ask what I'd seen in the room. Her nose, human as it was, could smell it too. She just raised her chin and turned around. Gary kept his eyes down, careful not to make eye contact with me or Adam, and led the way back through the house. I wondered what I would have seen in his eyes if he'd let me look, because he wouldn't have hidden his eyes just to avoid offending someone. Coyotes don't run that way. As soon as we were all outside, Adam surged to the front of our little parade. He rounded the end of the house where the gate to the back had been ripped off and thrown to the side. The rest of the fence was a thick hedge, so it was impossible to see what was in the backyard until we were right on top of it. Gary made a noise, but Lucia just walked into the middle of the bloody mess in her backyard and knelt beside her big white Amstaff and closed the dead dog's eyes. There were 10 chain-link kennels in the yard, taking up exactly half the space. Each had a doghouse with an extended roof that gave the dogs outdoor space and still had some protection from the weather. The other half of the yard was lawn, mowed to golf course neatness. It must have been neat and tidy, even pretty, before someone had killed all the dogs and left. The gates of 8 of the kennels had been ripped off their hinges and thrown willy-nilly.
Some of them could have been rehung with new hinges, but some of them were badly damaged. One had been crumpled into a ball. In front of the kennels, 8 dogs lay on their sides, each with a single deep wound that had laid open their necks. I recognized the dog that had put his head on my knee and blinked back tears.
"I hate it when the dog dies at the end," said Gary, his voice tight. He slapped the chain-link wall of a kennel. "I tore up my copy of Old Yeller and threw it away."
Lucia didn't flinch at the noise, just rubbed her dead dog's uncropped ears. Adam gave me a sharp look, like there was something I wasn't seeing. I looked again and drew in a breath. The dogs were laid out, staged just like the women Guayota had killed. But this staging wasn't for us. There was a formality here, each dog in front of its kennel. Innocent sacrifices. I called Kyle's number.
"What?" he asked. The foggy connection told me that he was on his Bluetooth connection and driving. He should have already been at Honey's.
"Did the Canary Islanders sacrifice dogs to Guayota?" I asked. "And why aren't you already at Honey's?"
The dead dogs and the state of Lucia's bedroom made me sharper than I should have been. "First," said Kyle grumpily, "we are very nearly at Honey's. We'd have left sooner if I hadn't had to figuratively hold the hands of one of my clients, who soon-to-be ex-wife called and said she was sorry for all the time she slept with other people and couldn't they reconsider their marriage? The answer to that one is no, by the way, because she darn near drove him to suicide once and he's a good man and deserves better."
"Okay," I said. "What about the dogs?"
"I know they used to sacrifice goats to Ashaman," he said. "One of the guided tours we took mentioned it. I don't know anything more."
"Thank you," I said. "I'll see you both when we get to Honey's." I looked at the dead dogs again. They still looked like sacrifices to me. Witches drew power from pain and suffering, but also from death. Gary had said that Guayota needed a source of power. There had been dead dogs among the bodies I discovered out in Finley, too. But I didn't think Guayota had made sacrifices to himself. I wasn't going to say it in front of Lucia, but I was pretty sure that what had killed the dogs had not been Guayota. Guayota could have killed them, could have twisted the gates off their hinges, but there was a possessive sort of territoriality in the destruction of Lucia and Joel's bedroom. Whatever had done it had been marking his territory, and none of the dogs had put up a fight. Maybe Guayota could control dogs the way he'd controlled the Tibisena in my garage. But if he were going to kill something, I didn't think he'd use a blade. He'd have used fire. I mouthed "Joel" to Adam, because no one else was looking at my face. His muzzle dropped, then rose in a nod. He agreed. Guayota had been here. There was no disguising his scent. But Joel had killed the dogs and desecrated his own house. It was Adam who noticed that one of the 2 remaining kennels was occupied. He drew my attention to the kennel on the end, with an empty kennel between it and the dead dogs. I put my hand on the latch, and something growled from inside the doghouse.
"Don't open that," said Lucia, her voice sounding hoarse as if she'd been crying, though her cheeks were dry. "Cookie is not very friendly with humans yet."
I pulled my hand back.
"Cookie, come," she said. "Good girl."
The dog in the doghouse didn't come, though she moved around, and her growl increased in volume and general unhappiness. I suppose that for people who don't turn into a coyote, growls might all be the same, but not for me. This growl said, "I'm scared and willing to kill you because I think you are going to hurt me." I raised an eyebrow at Adam. He whined softly, telling the dog that no one here was going to hurt her. It might have been more convincing without all of the dead dogs.
"We need to get out of here," Laughing Dog said, bouncing nervously on the balls of his feet. "If he comes back, he might just finish the job."
He looked at me, and I saw that he was frightened and wanted nothing more than to leave us here and never come back. It wasn't cowardice, any more than the dog hiding in the doghouse was a coward. This was an expression brought on by experience, an understanding that said bad things happened, and the best way to survive was to leave as quickly as possible. I don't know what his life had taught him to bring on that look, but I could tell he was holding on by a fingernail. "Can't leave any innocence behind," I told him. "That would be wrong. And even if it weren't wrong, it would be dumb. I think that the deaths of these dogs gave Guayota power. No sense leaving him another dog to kill."
"She's not coming out," Lucia said.
She stood up.
"We got her 3 days ago. Humane Society got her because her owner's neighbor turned him in for beating on his dog."
She laughed, a sad, broken sound, as she looked down on her dog. "I ranted for an hour after I saw her. Swore that if I could hit a button and destroy the human race, I'd do it in a heartbeat. You know what my Joel said? He said, 'Niña, most people are good people. Take this dog. A lot of good people worked to save her. People noticed. They called the police. The police brought in the Humane Society, and they took her. Risked getting bitten so that she could have a better life. Lots of people working to undo the work of one bastard. You know what that means? Lots more good people out there than bad."
"It also means bad people's works are stronger than good people's," murmured Gary, but he spoke quietly. I don't think Lucia heard him.
While the people were talking, Adam had been talking too. The dog, Cookie, had quieted, her growls becoming whines. I figured that Laughing Dog had been right about needing to get out of here, and that Adam had done enough to make it possible. I opened the cage and snagged a lead and collar from a hook on the front of the cage. I sat down on the ground in front of the doghouse. "Okay, Adam, get her to come out." He whined at her again and ended with something as close to a bark as werewolves get. She crawled out of the doghouse, and I found myself whining in sympathy. She wasn't ever going to win any dog shows. Wouldn't have even before someone had hit her hard enough to blind her on one side. She was a mutt. The German Shepherd was pretty obvious in the shape of her head, but there was something else that gave her a heavier body. Malamute, maybe. Maybe even some wolf. She carried her head canted because of the blind eye, trying to see out of one eye and get the information she'd gotten out of both. Her tail was down, not quite tucked, and she uttered little anxious growls until she saw me. Then she barked and drew her lips back from her teeth. I stayed where I was. I could see when her nose first cued her in that there was something odd about me. She froze, the snarls dying in her throat. That's when Adam moved in and touched her nose with his. It wasn't anything a real wolf or a human could have done. He used pack magic and let her feel the weight of his authority and the protection he represented. She leaned against him and sighed. I stood up, slipped the collar on her and the lead, and she gave me no trouble, though she tried not to look at me more than she had to. Adam stayed with her. I looked at Gary, then down at Lucia, and he nodded, took her arm, and helped her to her feet. We left the dogs' bodies because we did not have time to bury them, though it felt to me as though we should have done something. But in times of war, the care of the dead is outweighed by the need for survival. I opened the back door of the SUV, and Adam jumped in, followed by the dog. I released her leash as soon as she was in, but watched to make sure it didn't snag anywhere until she settled. Adam hopped over the seat and lay down in the luggage compartment. The battered dog followed him and curled up on the opposite side of the SUV. She put her head down with a sigh, and I shut the door. Gary had taken Lucia to her car. He held out his hand, and she put her keys in it with the same sort of sigh of surrender that Cookie had given. He looked at me.
"We'll follow you."
Because Lucia was occupied opening the door, I mouthed, "Do you have a license?" at him. He just gave me a wink and a sly smile and got behind the wheel of Lucia's car. 9. Honey's house was farther out than Adam's and mine. It was maybe a little bit bigger. There is something to the cliché that the older immortal creatures are wealthy. Not always, certainly. Warren was almost 200 years old, and when I met him, he was working at a Stop and Rob without two thin dimes to rub together. I didn't know how old Honey was. We'd never been that friendly. But Peter had had at least a couple of centuries, maybe more, and he'd accumulated real wealth. He'd worked as a plumber for the past 20 or 30 years, and that hadn't hurt anything either. Honey had sold the business after his death and was talking about going back to school. She didn't need a job for money, but she needed something to do, something more than random trips to visit prisons with me. I pulled into her driveway, where there were already 5 or 6 cars, including Kyle's new Jag, in the parking area in the front, so I drove around behind the house and parked by the pasture and back. Peter had been a cavalry officer, and he'd kept his love of horses. There were 2 of them inside the fence. One had raised its head to watch me park, but the other one kept its head down, ripping up grass as fast as it could. I let Adam and Cookie out, catching her leash as she exited. She looked more exhausted than aggressive now, and she waited by my side as Gary pulled in beside me. Adam gave me a look and hopped back into the SUV. He'd gotten out so that Cookie would, but he intended to change shape back to human before he went into the house. Lucia was looking as though she'd reached the end of her rope, so I decided to leave Adam to it. "Come on inside," I told them. "Adam will join us in a minute." Honey's house was stucco, as most upscale houses in the Tri-Cities are. In the dark it looked white, but I knew that it was a pale shade of gray set off with dark gray trim. The rear porch lights were on, so I led our procession to the back door, into a mudroom. I kicked off my shoes, and so did Lucia, who was only wearing sandals. She looked like a good strong wind would blow her over. The dog was subdued, and I hoped she'd stay that way until Adam got through changing. "Both of you stay here just a moment and take this," I handed the leash to Lucia. "I'll go find Honey and see if she doesn't have a room to put you in. No sense in throwing you to the wolves tonight."
"Hoel is never coming back." Her voice was stark.
"Too early to tell," Gary said. "It doesn't look good, but saying it's over before it actually is will make certain the outcome."
It sounded like he had matters in hand, so I went in search of Honey. I started toward the living room, but heard noise upstairs. It sounded like cheering. The whole upper floor of Honey's house was one room. She and Peter had used it for parties, but one wall was set up with a projection screen so it could be used as a theater. From the sounds I was hearing, she must have set up a movie or something. I didn't hear a soundtrack or anything, but the voices of various pack members saying things like, "Look at that jump, exactly as much effort as necessary and not an inch too high," and "Triple tap, double tap, and hop." It was that last one, uttered in Daryl's voice and rough in satisfaction, that made me apprehensive. I entered the room, which was filled with a dozen or so people, in time to hear Aurieli say, "Fragile my aching butt. How did she manage to avoid his swing and hit him with the gun? I wish we had this from a slightly different angle."
"We do," said Ben. "We have 4 discs. This one is Garage Cam 1. There's also Outside Cam 1, Office Cam 1, and Garage Cam 2.
They were running the video of my fight with Guayota on Honey's projection system. The screen was even bigger than I remembered. The image was a little grainy, but I watched myself, larger than life, trip over the crowbar and land on my butt. In the background, the dog had already morphed into a man. Most of the pack was there. I picked out Christy, Aurieli, Daryl, Warren, Kyle, Ben, Zach, Jesse, Mary Jo, and Honey at a glance. Most of them were so focused on what they were watching that they didn't notice me come in. Christy, half turned away from the screen, saw me, but I couldn't read her face. The screen went blank, and there was a collective groan.
"Play it again." Mary Jo's voice was harsh. "I want to see that first part in slow motion, where she figures out that he's not human."
I cleared my throat, and the room fell silent. "Honey, is there a bedroom where I can put Lucia? Guayota paid her a visit, and she's pretty fragile. We brought her here to be safe."
"Lucia?"
Honey got up from one of the couches scattered around the room, all facing vaguely in the direction of the screen on the wall.
"That's the woman who told us about the dogs, right?"
I nodded, taking a half step back, because once I'd spoken, they'd all twisted around in their seats to look at me, and they were watching me with intent. To Honey, I said, "Her dogs are dead and her husband's missing. She needs some time to regroup and a safe place to be, so we brought her here. Some clothes to sleep in and to wear tomorrow would also be nice."
Damn, lady, said Zack, looking at me from the corner of his eye. Damn, but you don't have any quit in you at all.
Takes a lickin' and keeps on tickin', said Warren. That's our mercy.
Christy's face was still unreadable, but she was watching me with her shoulders tight. Her eyes met mine for a moment, and I saw a flash of shame before she looked down and away.
Why didn't you run? Asked Mary Jo, pulling my attention away from Christy. You could have gotten away.
Because I thought he was human, I told her, all but squirming. I felt like they'd all seen me naked, though all they'd done was watch a video I'd known was running while I fought Guayota. I wanted to get out of there, but Mary Jo was waiting for more of an answer. By the time I figured out that he wasn't human, it was too late, and I was trapped in the garage.
Where did you get that disc, anyway?
One of Adam's security team dropped them off, said Honey. I thought it would be a good thing to see this man in action before we had to face him.
Honey got up and went to the projector system. I thought she was going to turn it off, but she hit replay, then grabbed my arm and urged me back down the stairs, while a larger-than-life-sized me got the gun out from under the counter and waited for Guayota.
Do them good to see it again, Honey said as we started down. They like to dismiss you as a liability. Let them see you fight.
I'd have lost if Adam and Tad hadn't shown up, I told her.
That lot, most of them, would have lost when the dog started his attack, she said unperturbed.
She gave me a laughing glance.
What I really wish, though, is that there had been a camera at your house when Adam tore a strip off Christy when she wasted time playing stupid games with his phone when you were calling for help. I'd pay a lot of money to have gotten to see that.
She wouldn't have done it if she'd known I was in danger, I told her, and it felt odd to be defending Christy.
Maybe not, said Honey, but I'd sure have liked to have been there to see Adam dressing her down. He never did before. She was too good at making everything someone else's fault.
She led the way back into her kitchen and did a double take when she saw Gary.
I thought you were in...
Honey hadn't been with us when we discussed his jailbreak and my seeing him at the crime scene in Finley. Apparently no one had mentioned it to her.
I decided to follow you, he broke in with a good old boy smile before she could say the prison word. The most intriguing, most beautiful woman I've ever seen. I thought if she would just look at me, I would never need to eat again, because that look would sustain me for the rest of my life.
Do those kinds of lines ever really work? Honey asked coolly, having gotten over her surprise.
She glanced at Lucia and warmed her expression as she gave the rest of us a discreet nod. She wouldn't talk about the jailbreak in front of anyone else.
Lucia, come with me and I'll get you set up.
What do you want me to do with Cookie?
When Honey looked blank, Lucia clarified, with the dog. Honey looked at the battered dog, glanced at me, then went to her cupboard and pulled out a mixing bowl.
We'll send someone out for dog food in the morning. There's a bathroom off the bedroom you'll be in, and we'll fill this with water there.
The two of them left, and I caught Gary by the arm before he could follow. You'd better cool your jets, I told him, because although he might have interrupted her to stop her from blurting out where she'd last seen him, there had been real intent in his flirting, as there hadn't been when he'd been messing around with Kyle and Zack. Honey will wipe the floor with you. His eyes went half-mast, and his voice dropped in evident pleasure.
I know.
I threw my hands up in the air. You've been warned. Don't come looking for sympathy here. The outside door opened, and Adam came in. He stomped the dirt off the bottom of his shoes on the mudroom mat with determined slowness. I recognized the careful movement as an attempt to keep his still agitated wolf under control. His calmness in the back of the SUV had been more of the same. My wolf didn't like being helpless when someone he felt responsible for was in trouble. Hoel had done some work for Adam, and that was enough to make him Adam's responsibility. I leaned against a counter and relaxed deliberately. Gary raised an eyebrow, looked toward the mudroom. Then he proved he was a lot better at reading people than he liked to pretend, because he copied my position on the far side of the kitchen from the mudroom. He left a lot of space between me and him. Adam came into the kitchen after he was satisfied with the state of his shoes. He saw Gary and me, and came over and leaned on the counter too, close enough to me that his body pressed against my side. He focused his gaze toward the opposite wall, where a cabinet displayed antique dishes,
very carefully not looking at Gary on the other side of me. I broke the silence. Tad, I said, because it should have occurred to me earlier to warn him.
I called before I came inside.
Tad said he'd take the opportunity to visit his father, Adam told me.
Guayota is welcome to try to find him in Fairyland.
He frowned.
I'm not sure how voluntary his going is. It sounded like someone noticed him using magic, and he has to go talk to them.
Can he get back out again? I didn't bother to hide my anxiety.
Tad didn't think it would be an issue, not with his father there. Though he said if we don't talk to him in a week or so, we might see what we can do to break him out.
Z would be hard to hold if he didn't want to stay somewhere. He'd gone to the reservation voluntarily. Hostily voluntarily, but voluntarily nonetheless. Maybe not, I said. We subsided into silence again. Adam said,
Guayota has Hoel. Only a man who had those dogs' trust could have killed them, sacrificed them that way, one after another without their fighting back.
I know, I agreed.
You think that he's found a way to turn Hoel into one of his dogs, the Tibisenus, like the one you killed who turned back into a man?
I do. He bowed his head and growled. It took him a few moments to find his words again.
Hoel is a good man. He would never have killed, have sacrificed those dogs of his given any kind of choice. He'd have killed a person before he killed those dogs.
Agreed. Anyone who'd talked to Hoel about his dogs knew that.
We hit the trail at Hoel's backwards, Adam told me. Hoel and Guayota went to the kennel first. Hoel killed the dogs. Then, in the shape of one of the Tibisenas, he destroyed his bedroom.
Yes, I agreed. The destruction in the house hadn't been Guayota. If he'd been as angry as the animal who had attacked that room, he'd have burned the place to ashes. He was hunting his wife, and she wasn't there. He responded like a territorial animal in a rage. Rage at Guayota, redirected at the things he loved most. I blinked back tears at the wrongness of that.
Some sacrifices are worth more than others, said Gary.
Adam still didn't look at Gary, but he nodded.
Whatever tore up that bedroom was a lot more lethal than the dog you shot. Bigger.
They are shapeshifters like Guayota. It wasn't a guess. I'd seen the size of the claws on the walls.
There's probably no way to get Hoel back, Adam said.
I heard the guilt in Adam's voice, and knew that this was the issue at hand. I narrowed my eyes at him. I could argue all night about why he shouldn't feel guilty about Hoel and how we didn't know enough about Guayota to know that Hoel was lost. We had a lot of alternatives to explore before we gave up, but sometimes taking another tack worked better. If I hadn't killed the male Tibisena, then he wouldn't have needed a replacement. If I hadn't gone to talk to Lucia, maybe he wouldn't have tracked down Hoel. Unless he had some way of finding the people who are tied to the Canary Islands.
If you folks are done with me, Gary said, I think I'll get going.
Adam glanced at him.
You wait a moment.
To me, he said,
you know it isn't your fault.
I know it, I agreed. But if we're accepting blame, I think that I'm closer to the cause than you are. He grunted irritably.
Fine.
Fine. Adam took a deep breath. And I could sense the cloak of civilization that he pulled over the beast who wanted to kill something, anything, because Adam and his wolf were united in their dedication to justice, and its defeat could send them off in a rage. He took a second breath, and the mantle settled more firmly in place. To Gary, he said,
"You have been very helpful. Of course, you can leave whenever you wish. Do you have a place to go?"
Gary spread his arms and shook his head.
"I'm fine, man. I'm used to going my own way. Don't take offense, but trouble is looking for the pair of you, and I'd rather be a long ways away. Stay here for the night."
Adam looked tired. It wasn't the time. It wasn't much past midnight. It was all the dead dogs, the guilt he shouldn't feel, and the effort of controlling himself.
"We'll get you money and maybe a ride out of here in the morning. On the run is tough. Take shelter when you can find it." "You don't want me here," said Gary. "You've got trouble, and I'll just bring you more."
"We have pizza coming in about 15 minutes,
Honey said briskly, returning to the kitchen on the heels of Gary's words. She'd probably heard Adam, too.
"Eat, Stay the night, and then no one will stop you from running as far and as fast as you want.
I'm not a coward, he said defensively, just prudent.
He hadn't cared what Adam and I thought of him.
Honey's eyebrows rose. I never said you were. I also don't think you are stupid. Eat, sleep, run. Works better in that order because you can run faster on a full stomach and a real night's sleep.
Okay, he said. Okay, I'll leave tomorrow. Thank you.
It had been Honey, I thought, who had made him decide to stay. She was too smart not to see it, but she chose to ignore him. Instead, she spoke to Adam.
Warren told us about what happened at Mercy's garage tonight, and we've watched the video.
She looked at me and smiled, but continued to talk to Adam.
When your security man brought the disc of Mercy's fight with Guayota for you here, I thought it would be useful for all of us to see what we're facing. I've got it running upstairs if you want to watch it again.
Tomorrow, he said. I've watched enough of it while it was happening. Tomorrow is soon enough to see it again for me.
Honey looked at me, but spoke to Adam.
For a fragile, almost human, she did well.
Any fight you live through is a fight well fought, said Gary. That said, I might wander upstairs and see what it is I'm running from.
There was a faint bitterness in his tone, and Honey looked at him. He raised both hands in surrender and grinned.
Tomorrow. Running from tomorrow. Tonight, I'm in the mood for a movie.
He turned around, winking at me along the way, and headed toward the stairway, almost bumping into Christy, who was just coming into the kitchen.
Hey, pretty lady, he said.
He hesitated, but when she didn't acknowledge him in any way, he just grinned and kept going. Christy went right for Adam, as if none of the rest of us were there.
This is your fault, she said viciously. I felt so horrible bringing my troubles here, and it was your fault.
Careful, I murmured, but she didn't pay any attention to me, which was foolish of her.
I should have known when Troy was killed.
It took me a second to figure out who Troy was. I'd never heard the name of her boyfriend who'd been killed.
The only time bodies start appearing around me is when there are werewolves involved, she continued.
Juan Flores isn't a werewolf, I said. But again I spoke quietly, and she didn't appear to have heard me. Adam didn't say anything. He took a deep breath and just accepted what she said. It was the first time I'd ever seen a real fight between them. Watching him as she spewed guilt all over him, I realized that he enjoyed our fights almost as much as I did. When we fought, he roared and stalked and fought back. He didn't let his face go blank and wait to be hit again. Being willing to accept responsibility for the well-being of others was part of being Alpha, part of who Adam was, and she was very, very good at using that against him. Tears leaked artfully down her face.
I tried, then I had to run. But I can't get away from you, can't get away from the monsters. They follow me wherever I go, and it is your fault.
Adam wasn't going to defend himself. Honey wrapped her arms around her stomach and turned away. Honey believed herself to be one of the monsters, too, and so Christy's venom spread over Honey as well. Enough. Adam didn't make you go sleep with some complete stranger because he was handsome and rich, I said coolly, but this time at full volume. There wasn't a wolf in the house who hadn't heard Christy, so they could listen to me, too.
Stay out of this, she snapped at me, wiping futilely at her cheeks. This isn't your business.
When you blamed Adam, whose only fault that I can see is that he has poor taste in wives, you made it my business, I told her. Honey cleared her throat.
You do know you are one of his wives, right?
I raised an eyebrow.
Happily, he doesn't know how bad off he is with me, and I intend that he never will.
Life came back into Adam's eyes with a wicked glint, and I saw a hint of his dimple.
Better, I thought. Better.
Christy knew she'd lost control of the scene. Her eyes narrowed at me, and she lost the tears.
Juan came after me because of Adam.
You slept with a complete stranger, I said. Not Adam's fault, you... Jessie had come down the stairs with Ben and Daryl trailing behind her, so I didn't call Christy a slut. Made a poor choice.
He was a friend of my best friend, she said. Rich, charming, and handsome. He wasn't a complete stranger. I had no way to tell that he was a monster.
You didn't know enough about him for Warren to find him. You didn't know where he lived, what country he was from. I bet you didn't even check to see if he was married or not before you chased after him. How long did you know him before you hopped into bed with him? An hour? It probably wasn't fair to use what Jessie had told me about her mother's dating habits against Christy, but she hadn't been playing fair either. The tears had been cheating, and when she'd realized just how many of the pack had started to filter into the kitchen behind her, she would doubtless use them again.
"He approached me,"
she said defensively, not to mention falsely. "Are you stupid? How long did you live with the wolves?" I asked her incredulously. "You do know that most of the people in this room can tell that you are lying, right?" Stupid. She wasn't stupid, just self-absorbed and unwise. She didn't like people thinking badly of her, so she lied. I stalked away from her, incensed that most of me wanted to play fair instead of just ripping her to shreds the way she'd ripped into Adam. It felt disloyal to Adam. It felt like I might be letting her manipulate me into feeling sorry for her. As I turned back toward Christy, I saw Jessie standing a little behind her. Jessie was Christy's daughter, and I wouldn't do anything to hurt Jessie. With a good reason not to destroy my enemy, I paced back until I was face to face with Christy again. "Look," I tried to keep my voice gentle, "no one cares if you sleep with a football team, none of whom you know and all of whom are half your age." I repeated it so she could hear the truth in my words. "We don't care." Christy went pale in genuine hurt, making me re-examine what I just said. "That doesn't mean that we don't care if one of them hurts you. That's another matter entirely. Call us, and we'll go take care of it. But you have to quit flinging blame around."
"It wasn't my fault," she said quietly, believing it.
But then she aimed her venom at me and increased the volume.
"Not my fault. It wasn't."
"Juan came after you because you slept with him, then you ran," I told her. But then I started thinking about what that meant. If you had waited and told him you weren't interested, he might have left you alone. I worked through the germ of the idea. If he'd been leaving bodies everywhere he went, Warren would have figured it out. But there weren't bodies. There weren't fires until you ran. I knew there hadn't been bodies because Warren had looked for bodies left the same way as his victims here in the Tri-Cities. Why hadn't there been any other bodies? "That's not your fault," I told her, "but it is interesting." She stared at me, her fists clenched. "Had your friend slept with him before?" I asked. Christy was competitive. I knew, because Jessie talked to me, that Christy had slept with her best friend's husband just to prove that she could. Maybe she'd done the same thing with her best friend's lover, assuming that Floris had been her friend's lover. I didn't care. I just needed to know if Floris had slept with women other than Christy. Christy didn't answer, but her clear skin flushed pink, telling me I'd hit the mark. All the marks. "He didn't stalk her?"
"No,"
she whispered.
"He didn't stalk her. One night, and he was done with her. She was pretty bitter about it, but she doesn't have an ex-husband who is a werewolf."
Guayota hadn't sounded like he cared if Adam was a werewolf. He sounded like he wanted Christy back. Why stalk Christy and not her friend? What was different about Christy? The question rang in my head while I answered the nasty venom in her last sentence. "The only thing Adam has to do with this is that you bragged about being an alpha werewolf's ex-wife to catch Juan's attention." Juan had known that Adam was a werewolf and that he was Christy's ex-husband. Could have been that he'd researched it. But there was a hint of competitiveness in the way he'd confronted Adam. The kind of competitiveness that happens when a man's lover brags about a previous lover. She didn't answer me, so I knew that my shot in the dark was right that time, too. "This guy has nothing to do with werewolves," I told her. Guayota hadn't cared that Adam was a werewolf, hadn't cared about Adam, really, except that he stood between Christy and Guayota, and that he had been Christy's husband. "Congratulations, Christy. You just met one of the weird things in the world that don't fit neatly into the fey or werewolf category."
"Weird like you," said Christy.
"Well, yes," I agreed. I thought that went without saying. weird things like me.
What are you exactly?
I hadn't realized she didn't know, but I wasn't going to let her change the direction of the conversation. Not when I'd been getting some interesting information about Guayota, and not while Christy was still trying to make the situation be someone else's, be Adam's, fault. This isn't about me, I said. Ask me some other time and I'll tell you. So you got Juan's attention, and maybe because you know to look for odd things and don't discount them the way someone who hadn't been married to a werewolf might, you realized he wasn't just some rich guy on the make, not just some guy at all. He scared you, but not because he was so possessive. He scared you the same way Adam scared you. If Juan Flores had been exactly what he presented himself as, a bored young businessman not opposed to sleeping with any pretty woman who threw herself in his path, it would have been okay. Instead, you got a man who was a lot more than he appeared to be on the surface. It scared you, and you ran.
He cut his hand, she said in a low voice, and it healed like Adam's cuts and bruises healed.
I closed my eyes. She'd known he wasn't human. She'd known and hadn't warned any of us.
Why didn't you tell me that? Asked Adam, sounding of all things hurt. Did you think that we wouldn't help you?
I wasn't hurt. My hands curled with the effort of not smacking her because she'd put everyone in danger and hadn't told us everything she knew.
I didn't know there was anything else out there, she said. The Fae are locked up where they belong. He wasn't a vampire. I thought he was a werewolf.
Then why not tell us? Asked Mary Jo from the doorway of the kitchen. Christy looked around and realized it wasn't just Adam, Honey, and me who had been listening. Jesse, Ben, Daryl, and Aurelie were in the kitchen. But behind them, in the doorway, in the little hallway beyond, and standing in the stairwell, the rest of the wolves had been a silent audience until Mary Jo had spoken. Because that would have meant that she put her foot in it, I told Mary Jo and everyone else. Because until she saw the video, she really did think he was a werewolf, and that the reason he was coming after her was because she told him that Adam was her ex-husband, Adam, the famous werewolf. She believed that knowing about Adam was why he came after her, as a strike at the alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack. She thought that if she hadn't told him about Adam, he wouldn't have come after her. She thought it was her fault he knew her connection to Adam, and she didn't want anyone to know that. And she'd thought that if it hadn't been for Adam, Juan Flores would have just let her run away, which made it Adam's fault again. She believed it was Adam's fault, because otherwise she'd have to admit her guilt.
But he wasn't a werewolf, Christy said. So it wasn't my fault he killed Troy, burned down my building, and killed all those women here.
No, I said tiredly. It wasn't anyone's fault, Christy. Between your looks and running, you triggered some sort of psychotic episode. He fixated on you and gave chase. Not your fault. I looked at her until she dropped her eyes. Not Adam's fault, either. Aurelie bustled over and put her arm around Christy's shoulders. It was a good thing that you had us to run to, she said. Another woman might not have.
It is my fault,
said Christy, believing it, because that was the attitude that would win over the most people. That was one of Christy's gifts, her ability to shift her world view whenever it was to her advantage. She turned her head into Aurelie's shoulder and burst into heavy sobs.
I was so stupid to trust him.
Shoot me now, I thought. I'd known that she'd turn on the tears once she had the right audience. Jesse gave me a tense smile, then turned and slipped out of the kitchen and away from her mother's theatrics. I found Adam. I blame her, I muttered grumpily, if softly. My voice hadn't been quiet enough to escape wolf ears, but none of the people gathered around Christy looked my way. Even with very good hearing, you have to be listening first. Adam kissed my head and dragged me closer until my back was tight against his front. He dropped his mouth to my ear.
Okay. As long as you keep in mind that just because you blame her doesn't mean it is her fault.
Though he'd put his mouth to my ear, he didn't bother whispering. Only if you remember that while she is drumming up sympathy for her heaping helping of guilt, she doesn't really feel responsible, I said. Just for now responsible.
Sounds like you know our Christie as well as those of us who lived with her, said Honey, leaning a shoulder lightly against both of us in a gesture of solidarity. She looked at the pack and said, some of us, anyway.
On the far side of the werewolf pack trying to comfort Christie, Ben shared a cynical smile with us. He wasn't petting Christie either. The pizza guy came after that and broke up the comfort poor Christie party. Pizza places don't usually deliver that far out in the boonies, but Honey, it turned out, had an arrangement with a place in Kennewick, an arrangement that included a huge tip for the driver and a surcharge on the pizza. The food was a signal, and as soon as the last scrap of pizza was gone, everyone retreated to their Honey-assigned sleeping places. Adam and I got the formal living room. Jessie opted into the giant upstairs room with her mother, where they decided to watch some disaster film from the 70s that had just made it to video.
The upside of this, Adam told me as we stood next to the air mattress, which had a fitted sheet already stretched over it, a pair of pillows, and a blanket, is that we get this room to ourselves.
I dropped down to sit on the mattress and gave him a look. No door, no fun. The sounds of the movie filtered down the stairs and into the room. Everyone in that room, everyone who was something other than human at least, would hear whatever we said or did in here. Adam smiled and plopped down beside me. The air mattress bucked under his sudden weight and tried to toss me off, so I lay down for more stability.
I'm too tired to do anything anyway, he said, lying back beside me.
He reached over and took my hand.
If it's any consolation, we're not going to get a whole lot of sleep before we have to head to the lawyer's.
I'd forgotten about the lawyer, I said. Somehow that seems a long time ago. His hand clenched on mine, hard enough to hurt before his grip gentled.
I thought he'd kill you before I got there, he said.
Yeah, I agreed, trying to sound like it hadn't bothered me. Me too.
Don't do that again.
Okay, I said agreeably. How often can I get attacked by a volcano god in my shop? I groaned. Not that there is a shop.
You have insurance, Adam said.
I sighed. I'm not covered for acts of God, I told him. I wonder if they'll try to find a way to make that mean volcano gods as well as God God.
God God, Adam said, sounding amused. I'll remember that. Speaking of things to remember. And now he didn't sound amused at all. I like it when you defend me. I haven't gotten a lot of that.
That voice, I said, and he laughed happily, though even his laugh held that rough sexual overtone. He rolled until he was on top of me, and he nibbled along my jawline.
You like my body, he told me. You like me sweaty and watching my belly when I do sit-ups.
Hey, I said, trying for indignation. I never told you that. He laughed again.
Sweetheart, you tell me that every time you can't look away, and you know it. But,
he laughed again, then said in that deep, growly voice that was his own personal secret weapon,
you really like it when I talk to you like this.
No door, I squeaked. She'll walk in on us and make sure Jessie is with her. Adam froze and growled for real.
You're right. You're right. And I almost don't care.
Jessie, I said.
Jessie,
he agreed with a groan, then rolled up, abdomen flexing nicely, and onto his feet. He began to strip, not bothering to hide his arousal. If Christie walked in, she'd get quite a show of what she'd thrown away.
You might as well get ready for sleeping, he told me in grumpy tones. Morning is going to come early.
I'm keeping my clothes on, I told him equally grumpily. Without doors, everyone will feel pretty free and easy stopping in to bring you their complaints. Everyone being Christie. I'm not taking chances.
They come in, they deserve what they get, Adam told me,
and naked, spread the blanket over the mattress and me. I wiggled until I was right way around. Then I pulled the blanket off my face while he climbed under the covers. He planted himself right next to me, and his scent spread over both of us. I was well on my way to sleep when a thought occurred to me. He's broken, I told Adam. Adam grunted. Then, when I didn't say anything more, he laughed once.
Okay, Mercy, who is broken?
Guayota, Flores, whoever, I told him. He was doing okay in the modern world before he ran into Christie, before she reminded him of someone he lost a long time ago.
Adam was thoughtful for a moment.
Because there weren't any other bodies.
Warren would have found them if there were, right? I asked.
Warren or my buddies in the DEA,
he agreed.
The women he killed, the ones Tony brought me in to look at, they all looked like Christy, I told him. Do you believe in reincarnation?
Adam reached over and pulled me closer.
I believe that Guayota is very old and that Christy was his trigger. You know better than most how it is with the very old wolves. They'll do fine until suddenly they snap.
I still think we should give him Christy, I said.
No, you don't, he told me firmly. I was there for your speech in the kitchen, remember?
If we gave him Christy, I said persuasively, we could visit them in the Canary Islands.
Like Lucia wants to visit Hoel's mother, he asked. Giving him Christy won't fix him, Mercy. There's no reasoning with the old ones once they are broken. He started killing, and he'll keep killing. And then there is Hoel.
I sighed. I suppose you're right. I think we're going to wish that we'd had Tad come over here instead of going to Fairyland.
Tad didn't have much of a choice, Adam said. We'll figure something out.
That meant he didn't know how to kill Guayota either, but that wasn't going to stop him. I'd known that Christy was going to try to break us up, but I hadn't considered that she might get Adam killed to do it. I lay tense and miserable beside him. Much as I wanted to, I couldn't place the blame on Christy. It was just bad luck.
So, Adam said brightly, changing the subject, have you planned what you're going to tell Beauclair when he comes looking for his walking stick 2 nights from now?
Yes, I told him. I'll tell him to go ahead and take out the Tri-Cities, as long as he makes certain he takes out Guayota when he does. Then you, Jesse, and I can drive to my mom's house in Portland for a surprise visit.
Mercy,
he said reprovingly. Okay, I told him. We don't have to go to Mom's. Montana would work, too.
Mercy, he repeated. We've been in tough places before.
It will be okay.
You're just tired, or you wouldn't be so upset.
He pulled me all the way over on top of him and patiently waited while I wiggled until I was comfortable.
Go to sleep, he said. Things will look better in the morning.
I was almost asleep when he murmured,
and if it doesn't, we'll invite your mom down to deal with Guayota and Beauclair.
At some point in the night, I rolled off Adam, off the air mattress, and onto the floor. Maybe it was the rolling that woke me up. Maybe it was dreaming of Guayota eating at my kitchen table with Christy and my mom. They'd been talking about the flower garden and eating an avocado salad, so I don't know why I was so scared. But even awake, my heart was pounding, and I'd broken into a light sweat. I sat up and rubbed the back of my neck to dispel the tension of the dream and to rub away the lingering sting of my head hitting the hardwood floor.
Mercy?
Adam's voice settled me more than my rubbing hand had, wrapped around me like a warm coat on a cold night. Bad dreams. My throat was dry.
Do you want to talk about them?
I rolled to my hands and knees, leaned over and down to kiss him. I pulled back and decided to revisit the kiss. Adam's kisses were always worth a second pass. If we had had a door between us and Christy... Even so, I was more than a little breathless when I answered his question. Not necessary. I'm going to get a glass of water, then I'll be right back. I kept my voice to a whisper so I wouldn't wake anyone else. He nodded, wrapped a hand around my hair, and pulled me down for a third kiss. Then he smiled, let me go, and closed his eyes. I really, really wished there was a door, or that I was more of an exhibitionist. I was still dressed from earlier. Without privacy, I wasn't going to strip and give Christy a chance to say something we might both regret. All I had to do was zip up my jeans, and I was ready to face anyone who might be wandering around the house at this hour. In the kitchen, I drank some water and glanced out the window, and froze. A man sat on the roof of Adam's SUV with his head thrown back, a bottle upended over his head as he drank. He wore scruffy jeans, boots of some sort, and a white T-shirt. He was too far away for me to see him swallow, but the bottle stayed there for a while. I could tell by the way he pulled the bottle down that he'd drunk it dry. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, then glancing my way, casually saluted me with the bottle. With the moon at his back,